going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. I'm down here in Fort Morgan for the rest of the week. Back in studio, of course, is the producer of the program. He is George Ruggiero. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. I waited to ask this for this specific bit of company. Done any golfing down there?
So I played on Sunday. My dad and brother were here through the weekend, and then they left on Monday. I played on Sunday, and I played so horribly that I've just not had the desire to go out and like swing it as a single, if you will. Maybe I will. I mean, we're trying to make this like the first actual family beach trip. Cobb, who joins me today, of course, David Cobb, writes about college football and basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, you'll love this. We just went to Souvenir City. We got the family airbrush t-shirts. We're looking too good.
You got to model that. You got to post it on X for us.
We'll see. Okay, I'll do that. Well, because my wife goes, we're not going to wear those, are we? I go, yeah, we are. let me see. I'll show y'all for those that are streaming on the simulcast ESPN 8, which is just Cobb and George. All right, this is Josephine's. So it's like a
nice
A+. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's Josephine's. And then I got Aaliyah and me. Says like Wright Family Vacation. I mean, it's delicious. Like it's
that's
exactly
A+ work.
What
right
it's
there.
Beautiful. Now we also just need to get you a henna tattoo.
Well, that was on the discussion board.
Noah, feathers in your hair.
Listen, don't think your boy's not above coming back with some frosted tips. Like, you know, it seems like those are coming back in, like everything that was once in style. It does. I've seen, like, I'm having to watch a lot of Disney Channel, obviously, with my daughter. And, you know, like when they'll like occasionally show like whoever the 14-year-old Disney star is and they're trying to cross promote the NBA. Cobb, it appears like JNCOs are back in. The baggy, like ridiculously long baggy jeans, like the cool kid that was like talking about how cool it is to watch the NBA on Disney Channel. He was sporting those. I was like, wow, we're just going back to what I would not exactly consider a peak period of fashion, but like the early 2000s is apparently back in full force.
I'll never change the type of jeans that I wear again. I am a dad now, so I wear dad jeans. I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. You can basically like track my haircut, clothes, fashion, everything. It's basically been the same since I was 15. Like, you know, there would be times I'm in style, times I'm out. Like, but there's Also, not a lot of pictures of me out there where you're like, that's embarrassing. Like, there was occasional going to Pepperdine with the long sleeves underneath the short sleeve, like the Chad Michael Murray look. There was a little of that. Right.
That was a cargo shorts type of time in our society. Yeah. Were you in on the cargo shorts? Or
so I had a couple of pairs. They never looked good on me. Like cargo shorts and flat bills never look good on me.
I'm with you on the flat bills. Like, it just comes up way too high on my head.
Yeah, I have a smaller head. Like, it's the same. I have the same problem that when Nike was trying to dress Rory in like the flat bills with the shirts that had like the sleeve patches, like they were like multi.
They wanted him to be their Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, like they were trying to do that. Like, but it just doesn't work. Like, if you have a small head, flat bills just don't look right. And I'm the same way.
So I gotta ask, did you play Kiva Dunes? Is that where you played?
So we actually played Peninsula, which was on the other side of the bay.
Okay. Did you take the ferry? Did you take the ferry to the other side? Or
so I can see the ferry going up and down. But we just went straight from 59 to whatever we were on, 190, 180, something like that, Highway 180, 190, something like that. But Kiva Dunes, we ate at the – last night, Aaliyah and I ate at the Beach Club, which is, we think, in connection with Kiva Dunes. I wanted to play – so the course we played, I'm just over, like, Florida golf. And the old school Florida golf of trees, trouble – hit it here. It's an execution test. It's like, I'm just not playing enough golf. And the worst part is I kind of drove it okay, but there's also nothing more. There's nothing more of like the just infuriating than I'm sitting here in the middle of the fairway with a decent scoring club in my hand, and I have no prayer of getting it on the green. And I tried everything. I tried like full shots. I tried like back foot quartered shots, like flighted. Like, it didn't matter. I had no prayer. The only highlight of the day was I chipped in on 16.
Hey, there you go. Yeah. I remember being down there last year. It was just windy. It's tough to execute.
Yeah.
Tough to execute.
I'm not hitting. Let's just say this. I'm not in complete control of my golf ball.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So we had that this week. Maybe I'll sneak out tomorrow. But I don't know. It's also – there's also something about having to fork over $200 to go get your ass kicked. Like, it's just not a ton of fun.
That's true, but think about it. Like, you have childcare when you're on a family beach trip.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no guilt. Like,
that's a huge part of it. No, and we got both my mother and my mother-in-law here, so that has been a tremendous help. All right, let's celebrate. We got coming up on the program. Cobb alerted me to an article up over at The Ringer. Michael Pena of The Ringer has taken a look at the Grizzlies, and the big topic for them is to trade Ja or to not trade Ja. That is the Grizzlies' question. So we'll get into a couple of the larger points there. We'll start with that. Eric Hasseltine is in Houston, took a little vacay with his son. They went and saw a baseball game, and they went to last night's playoff game. We'll talk about the Grizzlies with him. So it'll be a pretty Grizzlies-centric first hour. We'll get into the list. Jason Smith will also join us during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But Cobb, since you alerted me to the story, I guess I'll turn it over to you. What were the key points that fascinated you the most? Because, you know, it's always interesting when you have these types of columns and these types of think pieces that are exploring something that I feel like we deal with every day. So when you kind of took a look at it from their perspective, what stood out to you?
Well, what's interesting to me is that you have a nationally respected NBA voice chiming in on the Memphis Grizzlies at a point in time when the playoffs are in full swing. The Lakers just got eliminated. The Warriors are participating in the playoffs. The reigning champion Boston Celtics are alive. There's myriad of storylines out there that national outlets
The Knicks are still in it.
They are. Well, shoot, so is our boy JB Bickerstaff and the Pistons, who, I'm not gonna lie, man, I would love to see the Pistons. I would love to see something good happen for JB. I really like JB.
I'm so frustrated from that. Like, I feel like they're in this weird spot where they should be winning the series and they're not.
They've been so competitive, and I'm totally with you, but it's not done yet. Like, they still have a chance. They're very much as good as the New York Knicks, which is cool to see. But amidst all these other NBA storylines right now, Yeah, we got Tyrese Halliburton's dad out on the court yelling at Giannis, and yet we're getting a Grizzlies think piece. A Grizzlies think piece. They just got swept by the Thunder. And I guess what it shows us is that, like, the rest of the country is kind of shocked by this too. Like, the rest of the country thought the Grizzlies were going to end up in the same position we thought they were going to end up in. And now it's like the piece from Michael Pena was good. A lot of really well thought out, like, well written sort of points in the story. The headline is this: to trade Ja or not to trade Ja? That is the Grizzlies' question. And I get it, because Ja Morant's the headline grabber. He's a part of this equation. He made some really good points. Like, for example, he writes, "Hemmed in by walls that are covered in grease, the Grizzlies enter the offseason at rock bottom, facing several big picture problems and no obvious solutions," which I agree with. And to him, the biggest question is what to do with Ja. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, Jeffrey, I'd like to know where you fall on this. I disagree. I think the biggest decision is what do you do with Jaren? And that will be partially dictated when the All-NBA teams come out in the next 2 or 3 weeks, because that's going to dictate whether or not you can offer him that Supermax contract. Then you have to decide whether or not you want to, or if he's not All-NBA, then you have to chart a future where, hey, either we got to find a way to extend him or trade him, or we risk him becoming an unrestricted free agent. And so those are interesting things.
I totally agree with you, because unlike some people out there, I think there's this Memphis mentality of anytime you hear anyone say trade Ja, you roll your eyes and you think like, oh, that's just the NBA doing what the NBA does. There's a superstar in a small market. Get him out of there. I think there are plenty of people that are coming at it from a reasonable approach and are presenting a reasonable case. Like, I don't think there are some bad faith arguments, but Michael, for instance, does not make a bad faith argument. Like, I think that was completely reasonable. But I guess where I net out on it is, if you were going to entertain Ja, which, by the way, I don't know how you felt about watching Zach Kleiman's exit interview on Saturday or Sunday, I beg your pardon. I thought one thing was very clear. They are in the Ja Morant business still. And I guess you could make the argument that that's leverage to try and drive up the price. I just don't see that. Like, it falls in line with what he said, and Michael referenced it at the trade deadline. It's a fantasy for people. I think they clearly established to me, Zach in particular, he's still in the Ja Morant business, and he plans on being in the Ja Morant business for the foreseeable future. My biggest problem with it is, I think if you were to move on from Ja, I think the opportunity cost is too high. If you're going to move on from him, I think you're going to get a lower return, and you are better off banking on, hey, let's hope we can get a good, healthy season of Ja, because one of the few positives I took away from this playoff stretch, air quotes, we were still reminded when it ramps up and in playoff basketball, when it gets harder, Ja's still pretty good. Like, he didn't play perfect basketball. Yes, it was a bummer for him to get hurt again, but there were times out there that you were reminded of, like, okay, this guy's still really freaking good. And I still think your highest ceiling is banking on him, because whatever the return is, it's either going to be picks, which you don't really care about unless you're doing a full rebuild, and I don't think they want to do that. And then B, you're probably getting lesser player. You're certainly, if you're doing a one-for-one, you're going to get a lesser player. And it just doesn't make sense to me. It seems to me the more prudent decision would be, we are better off banking on him being good. That's kind of how I see it.
And the other thing too, you trade Ja, okay, what's the plan at point guard? If you trade Ja, are you trading him for another point guard? That doesn't really make sense. You're going to try and go out and draft a point guard? How's that going to work? That's not logical. So you trade Ja, you get, you know, the hope is that the return is a handful of guys who can collectively make you better. That seems like a risk the Grizzlies won't be willing to take. And I'm with you, man. What changed from when Kleiman was so forceful in saying that, you know, it's a fantasy, and that the term he used, a fantasy, yep, for other teams out there that want Ja to be on the trade market? What has possibly changed in his mind since he said that to now? So which to me leads to the whole Jaren equation.
I guess to answer your question, the only possibility is more injuries. And if you've just decided, hey, the best ability is availability, like, that And I don't. I think he's made it clear that they view it more as bad luck than they do something is like inherently wrong. I think they would say it's just it sucks. It's bad luck, but maybe the luck will turn.
You know what strikes me though, the number of casual fans. I don't know if you get this in your group text with your buddies who watch the Grizzlies who aren't in the media.
Yeah,
I get more of it than I would have thought. Like, hey, I'd be all right with us trading Ja. Are we going to trade Ja? I'm surprised by that. I still look at Ja as the best, most electrifying, highlight reel type of superstar. I look at him in that light. Like, and the Grizzlies have never had somebody like that. I still look at him like that. But I'm starting to realize that not everybody does. And it doesn't matter what casual fans think. That's not necessarily going to drive what the front office does. I'm just saying I've been caught off guard a little bit by the willingness of the casuals, if you will, your faceless eggs on Twitter and your random buddies who text you. Like, I've been surprised by the willingness of those people to say, hey, they should trade him.
Yeah, I definitely have experienced the same thing where it's come up more. What I have interpreted it as is, you know, you take a look at the season. They win 48 games, and yeah, there was not a lot of, like, that's kind of the other thing is, it was 48 wins, and there weren't a lot of, like, good wins. It was just a lot of beating up on the bad teams, and you know, when push came to shove, and they played a good team, they got beat. I've taken it more as, like, it's just not fun. Like, I think there was this misguided notion that all of a sudden, like, this season was championship or bust for the Grizzlies, and that was just never the case. I think what it's a reflection of is, man, this team, and we can maybe get into it, but it's like, you would think playing the style of basketball they play, it'd be a better watch, but I think everybody's kind of sick of the Ja roller coaster and everything that comes with it. It's like, you know, I've used the example. It's like oftentimes it's like dealing with somebody who's an addict in your family where you're just like, you feel like you're walking on eggshells at all times. And like, you're trying to make sure, like, are you okay? Like, is everything good? And I think it's just got exhausting. And what people have made, like, they've done the cost benefit analysis of like, all right, well, what's the good? Like, we could take the bad with the good, but what's the good? And that seems to me to have taken over more amongst casual observers. And I don't think it's wrong. Like, I think there's definitely a part of the fan base that feels that way.
Well, he's the face of an underperforming franchise. That's the simplest way to put it. He's the face of an underperforming franchise. So I get why this headline from Michael Pena at The Ringer centered on him. Like I said, I think there's some good points in this article to trade Ja or not to trade Ja. That is the Grizzlies question. I just pleasantly disagree. I think the question is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to make all NBA? And if he does, do you offer him a contract in excess of $300 million? That is a massive, staggering amount of money, a whopper of a contract, making one of the highest paid NBA players of all time. Do you go down that road if you're the Grizzlies? That's, to me, the question. The Ja thing, whatever, like, that can be part of the offseason formula, without a doubt. Like, they've got to, you know, solidify the fact that they're going to move forward with him. Sure, whatever. Maybe they'll listen to trade calls. I'm not saying they won't. But to me, it's the Jaren thing that is the question. That's going to dictate what happens with the Grizzlies moving forward, what sort of finances they then have to operate with. Because if you spend that amount of money on Jaren, boy, you're going to be limited in what else you can do from a financial standpoint. So that, to me, is the bigger question than what they do with Ja.
Yeah, I think I would maybe say there's an offshoot, because I do agree. If we're just talking about one specific player, I think you're 100% right that Jaren is the player that I think is more interesting and says more about what their plans are for the immediate future. It's Jaren. I have kind of been thinking about this branch, and I know Matt Moore, Hardwood Paroxysm, for those that are online, he's written about this, and it's been something that I've been thinking about more. I think the new CBA has taken people, I don't know if anyone's really figured it out, and What I mean by that is, okay, let's take a look at the two teams right now that I think you would say, even like, I don't want to be disrespectful of Cleveland. I think it's a very good basketball team. But I think most people will still have Boston ahead of them simply because they've done it before. Like, maybe that's dumb sports people thing of like, well, we just saw it and we haven't seen it with Cleveland. So, but it seems to me like the two options are Boston and Oklahoma City. But like, let's take a look at it because they're two very different things. Boston has just made the decision despite selling the team. Normally when you put a team up for sale, you're cutting salary and you're stripping it down to the bare bones. But Boston basically just said, we're the one team that's willing to go in the second apron. We don't care. Like, we're going to spend everything on our guys. We're going to keep them together. They're the only team that has really done that. Then the other option is Oklahoma City. And with Oklahoma City, you're in this spot where, yeah, SGA's on his big deal, but Chet's still on his rookie deal. Jalen Williams is still on his rookie deal. There's enough of their core that are on good, cheap contracts that it gave you the financial flexibility to go out and get Hartenstein. Like, nobody else could offer. Like, the Knicks wanted to keep Isaiah, but they didn't have the money to keep him. And so it's allowed them, because they still have enough of the core that are on the rookie deals, they've been able to, like, build the depth.
That's the only thing that gives me hope, by the way. Like, eventually the Thunder are going to have to pay these guys.
Yeah, no, I no, because I actually think this is the lesson. And, like, because Harrington and I have always talked about this. With the gift of hindsight, if we're truly talking about best chance to win a championship, the reality is it might have been in 2011 with the core four. I know everybody points to 13 because they made the Western Conference Finals, and then a lot of people point to 15 because of the roster and everything, that was the best chances. But if you really go back and you look at it, they knock off the Spurs in round one. They lose to the Thunder in a seven-game series that was an absolute classic, multiple overtime games, multiple overtime games. And they matched up really well with the Mavericks, who end up winning the West and winning the title. And then you look on the other side, the Heat were still not fully formed. They were still kind of figuring out. LeBron was doing the weird villain thing. And maybe it turns out that that was the best chance. Conversely, what we might look back in 10 years is realizing, hey man, the Grizzlies' best chance with Ja, Dez, and Jaren was that 2022 season, because they were all three on their cheap deals. You got 3 years, or you got all three relatively healthy that year. I know Dez had some back issues in the playoffs, and then Ja got hurt in the playoffs, but they were all relatively healthy for that year. But it also allowed them to have the unbelievable depth that they had. Kyle Anderson was there. Tyus was there. You still had Melton. Like, you had depth, and that's kind of what we're seeing with the Thunder. And I bring all this up to say, it feels like a lot of these teams, Denver, the Lakers, the Mavs, like, these teams are really struggling to figure out, like, man, how do we do this with a core group of guys that we're paying a lot of money to? Like, how do we navigate this? And you're almost no longer rewarded. Like, it used to be in the last CBA, if you drafted well and you found guys, like, there were easier mechanisms for keeping your guys without penalty. Well, now, even if you keep paying them, even though you have the right to pay them more than everybody else, the total ends up being a penalty. And so everybody's trying to navigate that, and it doesn't seem to me like anyone's really figured it out other than Boston, who's just ignoring it. Like, we say, what do we care if we pick 30th or 31st? Like, we don't care about a first-round draft pick. Like, we don't care. Or you have a team like the Thunder that, you know, they endured a lot of suck for 2 or 3 years, and
yep.
Now they're paying, you know, now they're getting their dividends. But
so what I'm hearing from you is that the Grizzlies, with their trio of stars right now, are currently what the Thunder were like 12 years ago when they had James Harden, Russell Westbrook, yeah, and Kevin Durant, and they failed to reach expectations. Then they had to completely bottom out.
Right.
And then rebuild it from scratch. So what I'm hearing is we need to hire Sam Presti.
Well, if he's available, I would listen. I don't know if he's listen. Best I can tell, Oklahoma City doesn't have a beautiful river. We got some riverfront property.
Hey, like, Sam, how do you feel about Bass Pro Shops?
Exactly. You know? It's in a pyramid, and it's awesome. And
I
it's
mean, have you ever been to the Rendezvous? Because I
will give him a person as the Rendezvous' number one advocate. I will personally take him there and show him quite the good time. listen, we'll throw some Andrew Michael 9-course meals at him. Like, we'll wine and dine him. But I think the larger picture question for me is, I think the NBA, and maybe this is me, this is the ultimate pie in the sky, and I'm just being unrealistic. I don't think it's healthy long-term. Every single time you have a team that's good, and then all of a sudden they have a playoff series and they get beat, and you just throw your hands up, never going to win a title. Never going to win a title. Who the hell knows? Like, you know what I mean? Like, the problem that I see with the NBA right now is it's either you're a title contender or you should blow it up. And what that's created, though, is this weird reality of you have so many teams that are so bad, and you have this league where it's basically like three teams that can compete, and then it's this kind of weird, muddled middle class of everybody trying to break up this team, break up that team. They're all in different timelines. But what it's created is, like, you don't have enough teams that are trying to be good. And who the hell knows? Maybe the breaks fall your way one year. Like, maybe the Grizzlies get a year in which everybody stays healthy on their team, and then everybody else has key injuries. And you look up and you're like, man, I don't know if this is the best team, but here they are. Like, there's too much of this rush to, quote unquote, blow it up just because at one given point in time, it looks like there's other teams better than you. You don't know what next year looks like.
No, I don't think anyone's saying the Grizzlies should blow it up, though. But, like, the conversation is, do you trade one of the big three to try and get better? Like, I still think everybody wants the Grizzlies to try and get better.
Okay,
like,
I guess let's take that question, because I'll ask you this question, because I don't have a great answer for it. How many times do you trade one of these guys and get better? Because to me, what it seems like is, if you are trying to trade for picks and for the future, you're usually able to get a pretty good return. But usually when you're trying to trade players for players, you don't wind up getting a better player. Now, I suppose it's possible you could trade player for players and you kind of quote-unquote moneyball it, and maybe that's what's going to happen with this new CBA. Some people are going to have to figure out, hey, yeah, maybe we don't have one player that's going to be as good as Jaren Jackson, but we got three guys that equal something better.
We find a title contending team that is ready to go all in, ready to take that next step. But they got a couple of young studs who could, you know, 23, 24 years old, who maybe aren't ready to be starters on a title caliber team right now. But you trade Jaren for them. They're under contract for 5 years. Then they grow and develop as Ja and Dez are in their primes or something like that. I mean, that's probably the best case scenario, and it maybe wouldn't make you better immediately. But you would then have some financial flexibility to continue to build in that scenario. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that would be what I would say, is that you trade to a title-ready team, ready to take that next step, and then you hope they're willing to part with some really talented young players so that your roster composition can start to look more like the Thunder's, instead of looking like one where you got three guys making 30-plus million and everybody else, except Brandon Clark, I guess, probably, or maybe whoever you bring in with the mid-level exception, making less than 10, you know?
No, I mean, I guess I'm with you. So what you just laid out, though, is kind of what Denver did, or tried. You know what I mean? Where it's like, now the one key difference is they ain't taking away Denver's title. And they got a title. So, but, like, that was kind of what they did, and it wound up with everybody getting fired. I mean, the idea was,
which, by the way, what do you think about Michael Malone in Memphis?
So we've been having this discussion. Are you in agreement? Cerrito and I, we talked about it yesterday. Because of everything that we're just discussing right here, I think we can all just acknowledge it's going to be difficult to, quote-unquote, really improve the roster.
Yeah.
From kind of a, hey, guys, maybe acknowledge, like, you got to do something that makes the fan base believe it's going to be a little different.
Yep.
There's some other reason. We're in agreement. The only way you can really do that is you got to go hire a coach that inspires some confidence.
He won an NBA title 2 years ago. I mean, for crying out loud, like, he had a really successful tenure. He was, I mean, outside of Pop, the longest tenure coach in the NBA, wasn't he? So, I mean,
Spo.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And then I think Kerr.
I'm probably close. Yeah, Kerr might have him by a year.
I think it's those three. He was four, and ironically, Taylor Jenkins was five.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, funny, like Budenholzer's out there on the market, but I'm like, you can't go hire Mike Budenholzer. He's Taylor, like, Jenkins' mentor.
Yeah, it's like Jenkins 1.0.
Yeah, you can't do that. Now, I would be really interested in gauging Michael Malone's interest, because
I hadn't thought about it this way, but Kevin made a really good point in that historically, yeah, we haven't had the greatest success signing free agents. The market, there's no question that's a problem with the market. Historically, though, we've had some pretty good examples of signing big fish in terms of coach and or executive.
We got doggone Brown.
We got Jerry West to run the show.
Right.
I mean, getting Fratello was a successful coach that was on TV, and he was like, if people have to remember this, like in real time, it was like, what's Mike Fratello's new job going to be? They went and they got Fratello. It became a laughing stock, but when they hired Mike Ivoroni, that was considered like hiring the biggest fish. Like, this guy might change basketball. Like, again, it was a disaster, but we didn't know that in real time. Like, it was a big time hire. Same thing with Fizdale. Like, Fizdale was all brash and all talk, but
well, think about it. Like, if you're a coach who believes in yourself, you think you're a good coach, you're looking for a job. Oh yeah, like, who? What coach of that ilk wouldn't think that they could help these Grizzlies improve? I mean, look, you got Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, if you have any self-belief in your coaching ability, you're going to look at that and say, yeah, I can work with that. Like, I can take that team from 48 to 55 wins. I can win a playoff series or two with that group. Like, I can improve upon where they've been. I would certainly think the nucleus that's in place right now would be attractive to even a high name, high caliber head coach.
I mean, there's only 30 jobs. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, okay, if you're a free agent, you know, there's enough positions and there's other, you can kind of pick, but like, there's only a handful of open jobs for coaches. And again, I do come back to, I oftentimes think an NBA coach is largely going to be the result of the roster. Like, I think they're all pretty much kind of the same, but you got to sell something. You have to sell your fans. It's going to be different. And I always feel bad because I feel like this comes across as like anti-Tuomas, and it's really not. Like,
He was set up to fail.
Well, I mean, like, I didn't really think you were going to get data one way or the other. Like, it was too late in the season. There was nothing he could really do. And it may, like, that's the other thing. It may turn out to be the right call, but like, it's going to be the same situation as it was this year, where it's like, people are not going to be enthusiastic about it. And yes, you're going to have to win and show that winning is going to be the cure to all. But it's like, what we've seen from fans is like, hey man, like, December and January, like, we're watching the games, but like, we're not really in the mode of like, we're dropping everything we do to get down to the four. Like, it is funny how it's like, it takes towards like after the All-Star break and as the playoffs start bearing down, like, that's when people really start to get locked in. And so, like, to me, it's like, if you're going to sell that this is going to be different, I think the easiest way to do it is you got to hire a coach that at least inspires some form of confidence.
Yes, and I agree with you. I'll also say this. I think the value of head coaches in the NBA is often overrated.
Yes.
Head coaches in the NBA are not like the faces of your organization as they are in college sports. But I agree. Like, that's the easiest way.
I used to debate this with Herrick, and now you're in a debate because we would kind of agree. It's like, what if you're ranking the most powerful people in an NBA organization, where does the head coach rank?
Right.
Because number one seems to me to be star player.
No doubt.
Number two might be star player's agent. Number three, which, by the way, actually might work. Well, that might actually work out for the Grizzlies. Star player's agent's Mike Miller. Mike Miller could live anywhere in the country, and he lives here. Like, that actually,
let it fly.
That might, let it fly, baby. That might work out. Then it's probably GM. Then maybe second best player.
Mike ain't going anywhere either. Mike's not going anywhere. His son just enrolled at Murray State. So yeah. you can't get much closer to Murray State than living in Memphis.
It's like, then maybe head coach at fifth.
Maybe. I mean, in terms of what they make, might be far down, you know, lower than that. In some cases.
What they make.
Did you realize that Bill Belichick made $25 million a year as the Patriots head coach?
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, I read that in that New York Post article the other day. I was like, wow, that's I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't worth it, but you just don't hear the professional sports head coach's salary out there as much.
Yeah, I think they viewed it like the owners viewed it as like a competitive advantage, so they don't really release it. Like that's the other thing to me. It's like Steve Kerr, okay, I get it. Like he's got his titles, but it's like, man, paying an NBA coach $25 million.
Didn't it make you realize though how hilarious it is whenever Indiana is like, yeah, we're gonna hire Brad Stevens. And it's like, bro, he was probably making $15 million a year as the Celtics coach, and now he's running the franchise. Like,
yeah, I always laugh at that. It's like, oh, we got he's your first call. Okay, you can call him. But yeah, to wrap it up, I agree with you. The thing about Jaren that makes it fascinating is there's really two paths. It's path number one is he makes third team all NBA, and then you're going to run into this question of what is the number that's satisfies all parties, because you really want to make him a supermax guy. And then the other question is like, is Jaren going to settle for nothing less than supermax? Like, I think the answer is no, but I know what his agent's going to be pushing for.
Well, the Grizzlies can still offer him more than anyone else right. without giving him the full supermax. I think that's got to be what it is, right?
Yeah. Or what I think you should probably do is kind of what they did with Dez, and it might work out. Like, maybe in 2 years, you're sitting there going, God, that contract. But what you do is what they did with Dez, where they didn't make Dez a supermax guy, but they paid him, what the equivalent of the max was at that summer. But it's a fixed number. It's not tied to the salary cap. And so you look up when the new TV deal kicks in and the salary cap goes up, the number that you thought was high when he signed it, it's a lot more manageable when the salary cap goes up. But then the other option is, okay, let's say he doesn't make third team all NBA. And it seems to me at best, it's a coin flip and it may be slightly worse than that. Then what do you do? Because you really only have two options. They created some cap space and financial flexibility when they traded Marcus Smart. And so what they could theoretically do is extend Jaren with some of that money or renegotiate Jaren's contract and then extend off of that. So if he's making 23 this year, I think it's roughly $10 million. All right, so you could go to 33 and then you can go, I believe, 10% on top of that. So roughly $36 million for 5 years, $36 million per year for 5 years. So whatever that ends up being, $165 million, something like that.
Yep. That's the biggest question. What do you do with Jaren?
And the question is, like, does 5 years, $165 million? Does Jaren say yes? Because then, to me, like, the doomsday scenario is you start to negotiate this summer. You can't come up with a number that satisfies all parties. And you're going into the season of, like, well, we still know at the end of the day, even if he goes to unrestricted free agency, we still can offer him the most money. But is that going to be the primary concern? Like, that's going to really take, like, really feeling it out and some serious conversations. All right, George is sending me the note that we got a break soon, so we are going to do that now. Eric Hastein is going to join us from the Houston airport. We'll talk with him next. We'll also get into the list and have Jason Smith during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere. Applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
ESPN. That music means we welcome, of course, to the program, the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, I told you that we were driving down to the Gulf, and we listened to the whole broadcast on Saturday. I guess now as we've wrapped up the whole season, we've got the entire picture. How do you kind of look at a 48-win season that weirdly feels like a disappointment?
Yeah, I've had that question a couple of times, brother. I think it's understandable why people think it's a tad disappointing. However, like you said, 48 wins and in the Western Conference, and you're basically looking back at three games where you lost in the last possession, three straight home games. It very easily could have been a 51-win season and the three seed. But it wasn't, and you had injury issues all season. Ja Morant missed 32 games. Obviously, Brandon Clark did not come back from a knee sprain. You missed Desmond Bain for a stretch. You lost Zach Edey for a stretch. Those are key components. And then obviously the Jalen Wells situation, which was just really hard to watch. Tough for the young man. And obviously he's going to make first team all NBA rookie. He was a finalist for rookie of the year. I thought the right guy won it at the end of the day. I think Stephon Castle really came on strong after, feeling his way through, but he was playing just phenomenal at the end of the season. And I think Zachary Richichet kind of overtook Jalen after that injury, which he looked good at spurts, but I think, Jalen did a phenomenal job. But you look at it and you think, okay, where were you? And at the break, I think, being 36 and 18 had everybody with these lofty expectations. I mean, even I was thinking, okay, well, cool. You're not going to be in the play-in tournament. You're a top six at worst, but you got a tough schedule ahead. Now you get tested. And quite honestly, they just didn't answer those tests. And they alluded to that in their exit interviews that they've got to play better against the better competition, that, it's great that you beat up on all the sub 500 teams. And it's great that you had opportunities to win games against really good teams, but didn't come through, but you got to make that happen. And the team is young. I get that. And people say that they are chronologically and age-wise, they're one of the younger teams in the league. They've got experience, Oklahoma City's got experience, but playing together in continuity matters. And you didn't have a lot of that this year for various reasons. One, obviously, nobody played with Scotty last year or really played with Vince Williams. Vince has been around, but he never really had a role. And Zach Edey and Jalen Wells are new. And even last year, Jaren takes a role that he's the lead guy because everybody else was hurt. Desmond was hurt and Ja was hurt. Marcus Smart was hurt. But you had lineups at the end of the year that hadn't played a minute of NBA basketball together. That's really tough to overcome when you're going against a Thunder team that's had the same five guys. They added Hartenstein this year, but four of those five guys have played together for 3 years, and they play all the time together. And so that's one thing you can look at. But also, you know, they did not take very good care of the basketball all season. So I think that's the disappointing thing. The offense was fun to watch. It started with a, you know, just basically a five out, and teams kind of caught on how to defend that. Obviously, the coaching change brought in some more high pick and roll actions. And I thought even at times where maybe their numbers were down, they were still playing fast, but they've got to cut back on the turnovers. And I think that's the where the frustration comes in. It seemed like a lot of self-inflicted wounds. And in a lot of times where it just felt like when you were struggling, that the rope got let go of. And, you know, Desmond and John, Jaren all alluded that, hey, look, it's on us. You know, we've got to look in the mirror, and everybody's got to look in the mirror and start there and come back with a better energy, a better effort, a better attitude. And, you know, what happened to Taylor Jenkins, it falls on our shoulders. What happens with Tuomasi Sala is going to fall on our shoulders, and our success falls on, and failures fall on our shoulders. And that's kind of the way it was put. You know, I don't want to say it verbatim because I wasn't at the exit interviews, but, and I think also looking what happened in game three and even game four, you know, even to be honest with you, even in game two, you cut it to eight in game two in Oklahoma City, and you had the momentum and you threw away three straight possessions, and they don't miss those opportunities. That's why they're the one seed. So, I think that's where the frustration builds in. It's, you know, you look what happened to Miami, and they're just not as good as Cleveland. It's just bottom line, plain and simple. They're not on that level. I don't think the Grizzlies are far off of the level of the Thunder. They're not quite there, but they're not far off. They lost every game, you know, in the regular season by double digits, but in three of those games, they were right there. And one of them, they had a lead with 6 minutes to go. And that's where they need to take strides forward. They need to finish teams off. I've jokingly said at times with this group that it seems like they're allergic to prosperity. Like, they get big leads and they just go, okay, we're good. We'll just slow down now. They've got to find that next drive. Like, you got them down 20, you want to put them down 30 and put them away. Not, okay, we'll just run a couple of plays and throw a couple of passes. The NBA is too explosive now. I mean, you watched last night in Houston, and I was at the game, and, you know, they're up 30 points, and people are going, you know, the Rockets fans are dancing in their seats, and everybody's excited. And I was like, you know, pump the brakes. You got a lot of time left on that clock. You know, make sure that you still go out and finish it off. Like, let's not, you know, give them a glimmer of hope. And you look down the stretch, and Steve Kerr pulls all of his guys, and Ime Udoka has to leave his guys out there. And I think that's going back. I kind of remember the same thing in Memphis when the Grizzlies a couple seasons ago beat the Warriors by 50 or, you know, 49 or whatever it was in game five. And you saw Steve Kerr just kind of let it go. I was like, all right, we're not winning this game. We're not going to win it. It's all on their side. Let's get our guys out. Let's not put any unnecessary mileage on them. Let's not put them in any unnecessary risk harm. And let's go, you know, get ready for game six. And I thought that's brilliant when you think about it. It's like, all right, look, touche, you won this one. I'm not quitting, but I'm going to play these guys. And these guys are going to run actions that we're going to see what works against your guys, if that makes sense. Now you can test some things out because you've already kind of let go of the rope. You got Pat Spencer and even though Cam Spencer apparently got ejected from the game last night, yep, even though he wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. It was funny. Zach Sarva called Pat Spencer Cam Spencer, and I was like, huh, I didn't know Cam was here tonight. Good for him. But now you throw some plays in there that you want to see how they defend them. What do they do? Maybe some things that they haven't seen you run with your group. I think it's brilliant. I mean, I think what Steve Kerr did last night is really thinking ahead. Now, maybe I'm overanalyzing it, and Steve Kerr is saying, what are you talking about? I just pulled my guys so nobody got hurt. Even then, I still think that's brilliant. So you go back and look at this group, you've got to execute down the stretch. You've got to figure out how to not throw passes that you just assume. I said it at times this year, and I'm not trying to pick on the guys, but there were times this year where it looked like they thought they were in a shoot-around. They were just throwing a pass just because it's what the action says to do, and you don't throw it with any precision or zip or anything. And NBA players are too good for that. And you're kind of going through the motions. And at times that does work in a game. But when you're behind, you got to lock in. You got to go meet the ball. You've got to go help a guy out. the number of near 5 second calls this year was remarkable. And the number they got was remarkable, including one at a critical moment. But that's just, to me, that's waiting too long to get into your set. So it can be fine tuned. It can be tweaked. And I don't think you look at this season as an unmitigated disaster. It wasn't. They won 48 games and, you know, they faltered down the stretch. The thought of what could have been is what is leading people to that notion that it's disappointing.
Yeah, and I think also because, you know, as I was listening to your broadcast on Saturday, I think the other thing that made it really frustrating to watch is, as you kept pointing out, the same mistakes that plagued them in December were the same mistakes that plagued them in April. And the fact that, like, you know, like you said, even in game two, they kind of got back in the game and then just so casual with the basketball. You can't hold on to the leads. And I think that was what made it frustrating. But I think that's also the kind of the larger question I have is, how do you balance between, admittedly, Zach Kleiman says, hey, we're not good enough, we got to get better, versus, you know, I think the problem was whoever played the Thunder, we're going to face that fate. And maybe we're feeling a little differently if they're in one of the other series. So how do you kind of weigh between what's overreacting to a bad matchup and a bad series versus what they need to do to actually get better?
I think it's simple. First of all, you're going to have to play them at some point. And if you play them in the first round, the second round, or the conference finals, you're going to have to go through them. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. And you can take a page out of their book. When you watch them, did you ever see anybody just kind of lazily jog up the floor?
Oh, everybody moved with purpose, whether it was offense,
they moved.
And they were constantly moving, and they always had a purpose.
And moved the basketball with purpose and played on the defensive end with purpose. And yeah, of course there's plays they're going to screw up. It's a 48 minute NBA basketball
game. A lot of possessions.
Teams make mistakes. Nobody runs a perfect 48 minutes where you don't miss an assignment, miss a pass, throw a ball away, do whatever. But you look up and they were damn near close in game four, because you're looking up and you're going, okay, the Grizzlies are taking better care of the basketball. Only problem is, so are the Thunder. You still have 8 turnovers to their 4. That's 4 shots. You still have them just getting a hand on a ball. Like, they're not going to get the offensive rebound, but they're going to disrupt you getting the defensive rebound, and they're going to keep it alive potentially. They're going to get a hand on the ball. And, you know, I think the one glaring, and I'm not trying to pick on John Conchar because he had no idea, but John Conchar goes in for a rebound in game 2. Whoever Lou Dort was being defended by, I can't remember, vacates the backcourt and starts heading off into the offensive set. Well, Lou Dort says, okay. And he runs in and taps the ball from behind out of Conchar's hands, because John doesn't know he's coming. It wasn't John's man. And John was just going up to get a rebound and start the set. Instead, it's poked out of bounds off of John, or poked away, and the Thunder pick it up and they get a 3-point shot. And you're like, what? Like, you can't not go up and secure the ball. But I get it. It's human nature. You don't think anybody's near you. I'm just going to go get this. Go get it. Go get it with a purpose. And I think that's where they're going to have to find that joy and passion again. And, you know, it's funny. Like, you watch the way they played when they beat Minnesota, and that was the last time they had a fully healthy roster. And you watched how they were that year, doing all the things the Thunder are doing, the group interviews, the group pictures after wins the Grizzlies started doing. Joe Murphy, our team photographer, who does some amazing work, took pictures of these guys after wins. They would say, hey, get a team picture. You don't see that. You don't see guys doing that. You see guys, you know, now sometimes get in there, but like Jimmy Butler's shooing off Buddy Hield the other night after the Warriors win in game 4. And, you know, he's like, I'm going to get out of here. We'll talk in the locker room. Like, where the Thunder are all there together, and they get along and they hang out and they do those things. And talking to their people, they said it's just camaraderie. And there's a certain joy that comes with playing with guys you like being around. And, you know, we were fortunate enough on this trip that my son and I are on to go down to the field and met Tigers first baseman Spencer Torkelson, who was a former first round pick. And, you know, I just said, hey, man, you're a fun team to watch. And he goes, we really love playing the game of baseball with each other, like on the same squad. And I'm like, man, that's like refreshing to hear a professional athlete say that, because they do. And it shows. And when you play with guys that you want to be around, it does show. It really, really does. And, you know, when you're frustrated or whatever, I get it. But you have guys pick you up. And for whatever reason right now, it just didn't seem to click after the All-Star break for this group. It didn't seem to be that same unbridled joy and passion in the ball movement. You got guys playing hard. No one can sit here and tell me that Scottie Pippen Jr. laid down, that anybody laid down. But you had moments where it just looked like, oh, here we go again. And the mental toughness has to improve. How does that happen? Maybe a veteran presence in the locker room that's been through some battles. I think the position needs you need, obviously, with Brandon sustaining that injury, the rebounding weakness was glaring with Clark out of the lineup. So I think you need another rebounder, and I think you need a true facilitator for that backup spot. You can run Scotty as your backup combo guard. He can be out there with Ja. He can be up with Ja and Dez, and he fits better when he's not asked to facilitate the offense. I think that's just my opinion. I'm not knocking Scotty, but you get a guy like a Tyus Jones. I mean, he was the perfect example of that. So I think they need to look at that. Now, how do you do that with the way your salary cap is structured with no first round pick, 2 second round picks? You have some expiring money. You're looking at signing Jaren Jackson in the, to an extension in the offseason. What are you going to do with Santi Aldama? These are all the things that will dictate that. I think it would be somewhat foolish to just go in and just, make wholesale changes. This is not a blow it up and start all over again situation right now. But yeah, there's some things that need to happen. And I think more so you look at, hey, we were good. We weren't just brutally bad. Now, you were not good against really good teams after the All-Star break. Why was that? Were there injuries? Was there dissension in the locker room? Was there something away from the game that led to you not being able to execute against elite teams? That's the question. And, only the guys in that locker room will be able to answer that and figure that out.
What are some lessons that you hope this team would take from this year and apply to next year?
Nobody feels sorry for you. Nobody. You're not the only team that doesn't get calls. You're not the only team that has, people after you. I get it. Like with all the stuff around your best player, there's that tendency to just look, everybody's out. Nobody's out to get you. Nobody's out to try to do that. I mean, is it evident that the league is trying to send a message to your best player, to John Morant? It seems that way. Yeah. However,
one can easily make the case.
Yeah, you can make the case. However, even with that said, that shouldn't affect the 48 minutes you're on the court. If you're not getting calls, fight through, battle through it. Figure out a way to protest what is happening, but without being so demonstrative on the court, without being so, woe is me with the look and the body language, because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And, I sat with an official, I don't want to say who, and we had a long conversation a couple of years ago. And the first thing he said to me was, he's like, man, can somebody tell Dylan, just to tone it down a notch? It's 5 seconds into a game and he's screaming at me and F-bombing me. And I said, well, that's how he plays. That you guys understand that. He goes, yeah, but come on, 5 seconds in. And I said, yeah, well, you're also talking about an organization that had their head coach teed up by Mark Davis 8 seconds into a game. It's going to be hard for you to convince me that there wasn't some carryover from their previous thing. He goes, oh, I know. So they do understand that. But you can't keep looking at, oh, look at us, we'll feel sorry. I don't necessarily believe that they do that, but they've got to find that mental toughness again. That toughness of, yeah, this is who we are. This is how we play.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out.
Every home run.
Gone.
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.